questions, chapter 9, section 2, here are your responses. You know, the Industrial Revolution opened up all kinds of opportunities for all kinds of people in the country. And women entered the workforce in large numbers and did all kinds of different tasks and worked in all kinds of different industries, truth be told. However, it was the garment industry, the garment trade, that the making of clothes, where nearly half of all female industrial workers were employed. Didn't get paid very much, weren't treated very well. Young girls working alongside their mothers many times to make make enough money for the family to sustain itself in far from ideal conditions. And that ultimately led to what is one of the great industrial tragedies of the age and one of the great industrial tragedies in the history of the country, the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire. And there's a video that I will put on Blackboard for those of you who might want to learn more about this particular event. The shirtwaist was a garment that was very, very common, very popular amongst women at that particular time, and there were many shirtwaist factories throughout the country and throughout New York City. But on a fateful day in 1911, when the women were locked into the building where they worked in the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory in New York City, 146 is the number most frequently given. Women were burned to death or died of smoke inhalation or jumped to their deaths when the factory caught fire and there was not enough means by which to escape. The elevator couldn't possibly accommodate all the women. One of the exits to the street was locked. It was one of those things that was a prevention thing to keep, the employers didn't trust the women not to walk out of the shop with garments or with fabric or whatever it was. So they locked them in, and that led to the death of 146 women, which led to calls for and ultimately a lot of reforms, not only in the garment trade but in industries in general. Women's suffrage is something that is very much front and center in this particular time in our history, especially because of things like what we just talked about with the shirtwaist fire. Women in many places had no say whatsoever in the political process, and therefore could not affect any kinds of change in the laws by which they were governed. So, the women's suffrage movement got started back in the mid-1840s at the famous Seneca Falls Conference in upstate New York in 1848, organized by Susan B. Anthony, by Lucretia Mott. It was the first effort to call attention to and do something to organize women in this country, and some men participated in that as well, for the advancement of women's rights. And the suffrage movement kind of ebbed and flowed at various times, was kind of given up during the Civil War movement, or during the Civil War, as a sign of loyalty to the country. And then lo and behold, as you guys know from your study of Reconstruction, black men were given the right to vote before women. The main leaders early on, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Susan B. Anthony, Lucretia Mott in the early days, those women had particular approaches by which they were attempting to get women the right to vote. The question number four, the three-part strategy, and that will be adopted by some women throughout the late 1800s, early 1900s, and then ultimately in this movie that we're going to watch, you will see kind of a younger brand of suffragist who has a very have a different approach to how the vote should be attained, and that leads to an interesting back and forth between the so-called kind of more conservative older guard of suffragists who believe it should be attained a particular way, and the younger, sometimes called more militant group, who believe it needs to be attained through some alternative methods. And that back and forth between them is very much a part of the saga that ultimately leads to women's suffrage in 1920. But the three-part strategy that was undertaken by, again, the kind of more conservative wing of the suffragists was, one, to convince state legislatures to give women the right to vote. And what is not understood by most people is that there were many women who voted in all types of elections from the very lowest local level all the way through the presidency before there was a 19th Amendment passed in 1920. So many states had given women full rights of suffrage. Other states had limited rights of suffrage. Other states had basically, you voted in like local elections, and that was it if you were a woman. And then some states allowed women not to participate in the political process at all. So that's what the 19th Amendment was all about, was to attack those places where women had no say in the process whatsoever. So part one of question number four is to do it at the state level. And I'll show you at some point a map which shows you which states had given women the right to vote before the 19th Amendment. The second way was to go and vote, as many women did, Susan B. Anthony and others, to challenge women being denied the right to vote based on a violation of the 14th Amendment. And no matter how many times women voted to challenge that amendment, the courts always came down on the other side. Women always lost their battles to get any sort of traction as it related to the 14th Amendment and voting. And then the third approach was ultimately to pass, was to fight for a constitutional amendment that would ultimately grant women the right to vote. And of course, that ultimately happens with the passage of the 19th Amendment, finally ratified in 1920. But that was a long slog. And again, the movie that we watch will talk about, you know, the challenges faced in getting that particular approach, which finally happens, but trying to get that accomplished through a constitutional process.